The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
If you took the five worst presidents in the history of the United States and added them up, they would not have done near the destruction to our country as Joe Biden and the Biden administration have done. Incredibly, we are now a failing nation. We are a nation in decline. And now these radical left lunatics want to interfere with our elections by using law enforcement. We can't let that happen. With all of this being said, and with a very dark cloud over our beloved country, I have no doubt, nevertheless, that we will make America great again. Thank you very much.
We played that earlier this week. Of course, it's from Mar-a-Lago, the day of his arraignment. And then he came back to Mar-a-Lago, gave that speech a couple nights ago. And I just wanted to play it again to set up the opening segment for today's show, because you really do see things lining up perfectly from a prophetic standpoint. The nation, obviously a failing nation, a nation in decline. Who can deny that, just looking at all of the evidence? And yet he's going to return, and you can see that setting things up to just usher in this false hope of trusting in a man. Just believing that a man can deliver us from all of these curses that are just all around. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us for today's program. Go to trumpetdaily.com, and you can watch the live stream of this show every weekday morning. That would be at 11 a.m. or 11:05-ish, to be precise, in the central time zone of the United States. So, lots to get to on today's show. There was a good piece at Real Clear Politics comparing Trump's indictment to crossing the Rubicon. You've heard a lot of people using that phrase, of course, hearkening back to the days of Caesar. This is from an article. You can see why it caught our attention. The title is "The Point of No Return." And my father was writing about that back in 2008. You can read more about that in the Lamentations booklet. All the literature that we promote on this show is offered without cost or obligation. Just call the 800 number, 1-866-930-3024, and request that little booklet on the biblical book of Lamentations. It says here, the Roman historian Suetonius described Julius Caesar as timid and noncommittal as he initially approached the Rubicon River, a shallow, narrow waterway that at the time demarcated the boundary between Cisalpine Gaul and Italy proper. It says here in January 49 BC, it says, in fact, the historian ultimately attributed Caesar's decision to cross the waterway, precipitating a four-year civil war and ultimate Caesarian dictatorship, to the supernatural. So he attributes it to this supernatural force that was motivating him or moving him to do this. And of course, we know all about the real spirit world. God's people know about this because of what's revealed in your Bible in passages like 2 Corinthians 4 and Revelation 12 and Ephesians 2. It says here, prior to crossing, again, according to Suetonius, Caesar uttered the now infamous phrase, the die has been cast. In other words, there's no going back. This is the point of no return. And it says here, while we cannot know for certain whether New York County District Attorney Alvin Bragg's catastrophic decision to successfully indict and arraign a former president of the United States was partially attributable to an intervening apparition, we can reasonably conclude that the actions of this past week have cast a most woeful die for the trajectory of our decadent, declining republic. There's no going back from this. And some, even on the left, have said they fear what might happen coming from Republicans now. In fact, Republicans are still showing their weakness, their unwillingness to fight back. They're on recess. There's some rumblings of, I guess, subpoenas flying out from some of these Republican-led committees, but we'll see. We'll see if that happens. But where are the impeachment proceedings for the Biden crime family taking money from the CCP? You mean to tell me that Donald Trump gets impeached for a phone call? And the Biden family can receive millions from the CCP? And they barely bat an eye in Congress, I guess. I mean, Jim Comer's revealed it. But where are the impeachment? You can see how perfectly timed this indictment is coming from Joe Bama. That's all anybody's talking about now. It's as if the Republicans are constantly playing defense. They're constantly having to defend themselves instead of taking it to the opposition. Victor Davis Hanson said over the weekend, or sorry, we're at the end of the week. We had a we had an observance yesterday that makes it seem like you're starting a new weekday or a new work week. In fact, it's Friday, the last show of the week. Sam, of course, pre-recording yesterday's program, subbing in for me during a busy Holy Day observance, a very exciting and uplifting one at that, too. But Victor Davis Hanson said, we're in the middle of a revolution that we don't even know we're in. You think about some of the things, not just from the Philadelphia Church of God, the past three-plus decades, But the prophecies, the signature prophecies of Herbert W. Armstrong, you can read about all of them, and he was right. He was right. He was right. Just order this booklet and get a refresher on some of the prophecies that Herbert Armstrong was talking about as far back as the 1940s and 50s and 60s. And so many of his followers and his supporters, they've just fallen away from the truth. And here we are. At the moment, I mean, we're passing the point of no return in many cases. Here we are at this defining moment. And where are so many of God's people? They've just fallen by the wayside. Only a faithful band, a little flock, remains faithful. As I say, so many of these prophecies are lining up perfectly. The fulfillment of the Jeroboam return in Amos 7, and then leading to, you can keep studying Amos. Look at Amos 8 and verse 14, where it speaks of the famine of the word. That's coming as well. Once God's people are carted off to a place of safety during the days called the Great Tribulation, Jesus himself spoke of this in the Olivet prophecy. And then there's going to be a famine of the word. And then all this literature that we make available freely, it's going to be hard to come by. I just want to take you through, speaking of prophecy, again, in U.S. and Britain in prophecy, this is, in many ways, the master text on Bible prophecy. But in this, Mr. Armstrong, of course, goes through Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28. He takes you through these pivotal prophecies where it talks about just not just the amount of the curses that are coming down upon our nations, but the intensity of them. It says here, the expression seven times, he's referring to Leviticus 26 and verse 18. I'll just leave that to you to study that verse, to get U.S. and Britain in prophecy. If you don't have a hard copy, of course, you can get to it at our website, thetrumpet.com. But it says here regarding verse 18 in Leviticus 26, the expression seven times is translated into the English from the Hebrew word, which conveys a dual meaning. The original Hebrew word Moses wrote is Sheba. It is defined as seven times and also as sevenfold. It says the seven times implies duration or continuation of punishment, but the word also conveys the meaning of sevenfold or seven times greater intensity of punishment. It says as a punishment that is sevenfold more intense. It says in this sense, the meaning would be the same as in Daniel 3:19, where King Nebuchadnezzar, in a rage, commanded that the furnace into which Daniel's three friends were to be thrown should be made seven times hotter. So when you look around at the destruction, the failing nation, the nation in decline, it's happening so fast. Nations abandoning the dollar as the world's reserve currency, for example. We'll get to that a little bit later. But these things that we've talked about and talked about and talked about for, in some cases, decades, it's all happening. It's happening now. And the intensity of these curses, like I say, you see it in the amount. You see it in the intensity. It's intensifying. The Biden people came out with a review yesterday on that chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan a year and a half ago. And guess who they blamed it on? You don't need to guess, do you? You know. Automatically, you know. This is the Associated Press. It says, President Joe Biden's administration on Thursday laid the blame on his predecessor, President Donald Trump, for the deadly and chaotic 2021 withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. It's all Trump's fault. I mean, they're going to be, if they were in power for the next 100 years, 99 years from now, they'd still blame any and all problems on Trump. Trump is the problem. Trump is the only thing that's wrong with America, the way they view it. So this review comes out. KJP, she's asked questions in the press conference. They bring out the Pentagon spokesman, John Kirby. And, the Associated Press said it was chaotic. Then you listen to the talking heads, and they still talk about how this was a great success, as if we don't remember the footage of people falling from, you know, C-17s. Listen to John Kirby from yesterday. He's talking here about all of the military hardware that they just handed to the Taliban. This is clip two.
Once you turn it over, it's just like what we're doing in Ukraine. We give Ukraine artillery ammunition, Stinger anti-air missiles, Javelin anti-tank. It's their stuff at that point, not the Americans. It's their stuff. That stuff belonged to the Afghans. And so this idea, this argument is just ludicrous, that we left millions of dollars of stuff in Afghanistan. We didn't. We turned it over, as the previous administration would have done too, because part of their thinking was they were going to have to turn this material over. It was turned over appropriately and carefully and deliberately with the Afghan National Security Defense Forces.
The Taliban had taken over the country before we even left. What did he say? That it was done appropriately, carefully, and deliberately. It's just like Ukraine. And to the extent there was any problem with it, it's the previous administration. They were going to do the same thing, Donald Trump. Trump! And on it goes. Look, we just gave this as a goodwill gesture to the Afghan people. He doesn't go back and say, you know, we were shocked at just how fast the Taliban took over the country, even before the Taliban had surrounded the airport where the evacuation was going on. They were manning the checkpoints of people that were allowed in and out next to the airport. It's unbelievable. I mean, this shocked the world. And it's not even 2 years ago. And here they come out trying to revise the history, the recent history, because they think you're too stupid to remember. This next clip, it goes on for about 5 minutes. We took a chunk from our end of the year montage from 2021. But the two statements you hear before the montage, again, is John Kirby. He's remembering the Afghanistan pullout, how wonderful it was, and how that there's so many things here to be proud of. We'll go from those two statements then into the montage, or at least a 5 minute clip from that end of the year montage. Listen to clip three.
Get planes coming in and getting them loaded, have medical screening, have security vetting, have diplomatic presence on the ground to make sure that we're putting the right people on planes, but also defend that airport from external threats. That's pretty remarkable. And so for all this talk of chaos, I just didn't see it. Not from my part. Nobody's saying that everything was perfect, but there was a lot that went right. And a lot of Afghans are now living better lives in this country and other countries around the world because of the sacrifices and the work of so many American government officials. So, yeah, There's a lot to be proud of, Peter.
The sudden capture of the country's capital has shocked the world and caused bedlam this morning at the Kabul airport, where thousands of Afghans are struggling to get on the next plane out. Many observers compare the scenes to the fall of South Vietnam back in 1975.
Taliban fighters took control of the capital less than 20 years after U.S. forces overthrew their government. Afghanistan's president fled the country, and much of the population is in hiding.
The desperation is undeniable as Afghans fleeing the Taliban scramble to climb onto a C-17, taking off from Kabul airport. This video appears to show those who couldn't hang on.
The Kabul airport, where U.S. troops are scrambling to fly Americans and allies out of the country. But anyone trying to get to the airport has to pass through Taliban checkpoints, and not everyone's getting through.
There is only one person to hold responsible, and that is President Biden.
I mean, to hear Jake Sullivan call this the successful drawdown of the U.S. embassy there, his words, I mean, is almost comical.
Where is the president? You know, why isn't he communicating fulsomely to the American people? I mean, why isn't he out there now? Kabul fell yesterday. Where is the president?
I inherited a deal that President Trump negotiated with the Taliban. And some of the Afghans did not want to leave early because the Afghan government and its supporters discouraged us from organizing a mass exodus. Afghanistan political leaders gave up. The Afghan military collapsed.
The president said that the buck stopped with him, but in fact, the speech was full of finger pointing and blame, especially for the Afghans.
You can't really say the buck stops with me if you don't really take the blame.
It is insane. There are people holding their American passports. There are people that work with the Americans, and they're not letting anyone in.
The completion by August 31st depends upon the Taliban continuing to cooperate.
Does the U.S. military consider the Taliban an enemy?
We're focused right now. The thing we're working against.
The suicide bombing did occur at the Abbey Gate. There are Afghan casualties, as you just heard. There are at least three injuries to American service members who were standing at that gate. The State Department put out the alert yesterday that Americans should not come to the gates. Concerns that ISIS or other bad actors would try to disrupt in these final days, the Americans pulling out so as to look as though they are pushing the Americans out.
At this time, we know that 12 U.S. service members have been killed in the attack, and 15 more service members have been injured, and we're doing everything we can to be prepared for those attacks. That includes reaching out to the Taliban, who are actually providing the outer security cordon around the airfield, to make sure they know what we expect them to do to protect us.
We will not forgive. We will not forget. We will hunt you down and make you pay.
Today in Afghanistan, the U.S. striking back, delivering on the promise of retaliation for a suicide bombing at Kabul airport 48 hours earlier. A CENTCOM spokesman said the target is believed to have been killed with no known civilian casualties.
I am now convinced that as many as 10 civilians, including up to 7 children, were tragically killed in that strike. It is unlikely that the vehicle and those who died were associated with ISIS-K.
That stunning admission from the Pentagon that a drone strike in Kabul amid the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan killed 10 civilians with no connection to ISIS-K.
But at this point, we think that the procedures were correctly followed, and it was a righteous strike.
How does it strike you that no one is held accountable? Because I know how it strikes a lot of people around the world, that you can get away with murder and nobody's punished for it.
I'm not supposed to take any questions, but go ahead.
Mr. President, on Afghanistan...
I'm not going to answer Afghanistan now.
Can you say if there's still an acute risk?
And then yesterday, Kirby says, there's so much to be proud of. Just so proud of it. As to the chaos, I just don't see it. I mean, that contradicts what the Associated Press headline said yesterday. the chaotic withdrawal. You'll notice in that montage section, that's from a year and a half ago, that most of those clips are from the mainstream media, the legacy media, CNN, MSNBC. They weren't buying it. They weren't buying the narrative because they were watching it. They couldn't deny it. People were falling from the sky trying to escape Taliban rule. The Taliban controlled Kabul before U.S. forces even left. And yeah, they didn't adjust anything along the way. They didn't push back the withdrawal day. They did nothing except turn and run, tail between the legs. And even this far on, even when the Associated Press reads this review and says, well, there's an admission here that it was chaotic, but it was Trump's fault. Kirby comes out and says, you know, we're really proud of it. We have a lot to be proud of. And the chaos, the chaos that everyone's talking about, I don't see it. You don't see it. These are like the blind and dumb dogs of Isaiah 56. Read it. That's who's presiding over all of this chaos, all of these curses, all of this destruction. Listen to the Homeland Secretary. This is Alejandro Mayorkas. This was from several days ago, but he's talking about the curse at the southern border. That's not really a curse. It's not really a problem. It's not even a crisis. Clip 8.
The chief of the Border Patrol, Raul Ortiz, testified before Congress that some areas of the border are in a crisis situation. Do you agree?
I think that we face a very serious challenge in certain parts of the border.
Do you view what's happening right now on the border as a crisis?
I view it as a significant challenge.
Why won't you say the word crisis?
You know what? Because I have tremendous faith in the people of the Department of Homeland Security. And a crisis speaks to me of a withdrawal from our mission.
60 minutes. Even 60 minutes. The lady there can't believe he won't admit it's a crisis. No, there's challenges, yes. But it's certainly not a crisis. 6.1 million illegal immigrants have crossed the border since Biden took office. Illegitimately, by the way. 6.1 million. Then you look at the Chinese spy balloon. I played that clip for you the other day. Biden, who said that, yeah, there was nothing really sensitive that they retrieved. And then we learned this week, NBC says, actually it was. It was some very sensitive, secretive information that the Chinese helped themselves to as the balloon just floated right across the country. If you've been watching, and you're forgiven if you haven't noticed it, because here again, no one in the legacy media seems to be concerned about the world abandoning the U.S. dollar. What happens when we lose the reserve currency status that we've enjoyed for decades? We've been warning of this for a long time. You go back to some of those clips we've played from Herbert Armstrong, where he says it's an economic crisis that's really going to serve as a catalyst to bring together the Holy Roman Empire together with the demise of the American superpower. This is from an article we wrote back in 2019. It's called When Will the Dollar Collapse? No currency reigns forever. The same pressures that unseated the French franc in the 19th century and the British pound in the 20th century will unseat the dollar in the 21st century. What caused national banks to stop using the British pound for their transactions in 1919? It was primarily Britain's debt. Governments looked at how much Britain owed, its economic output, and the fact that its currency was backed not by gold, but by the belief that it was valuable, and they stopped believing. Once the belief is gone, the belief that it's valuable, the belief that it's indispensable, it's gone. It's over. It says here, today, America has far worse debt, and it continues to borrow. Nations are losing faith in the dollar's stability. They just don't have another option yet. They're losing faith in the dollar. That's from an article 4 years ago. They're losing faith in the dollar, but they don't have enough faith in another currency. So the party continued. It continued for a few more years. Robert Morley. He wrote in 2009, this is again at thetrumpet.com, it says, what do China, India, Brazil, Russia, France, and Germany have in common? These countries most often can't agree on anything, but they're united in one strange and ominous way. They blame the United States for wrecking the global economy, and they think the dollar is the wrecking ball. They were ready to abandon the dollar years ago. And it's only now that they're looking at the Chinese currency or the Indian currency or even the Russian currency and concluding, well, let's just trade with these currencies. Forget about the dollar. Tucker, on his show, this is from Wednesday night, he gave us a historical sweep of all that the United States has been able to enjoy. And so much of it, again, it wasn't backed by, you know, anything of actual value, but it certainly did allow for the rise of the middle class in the United States with the dollar reigning supreme over the course of decades. Listen to this historical sweep. This is clip four.
For nearly 80 years since the end of the Second World War, the U.S. dollar has effectively been the currency of the world for our entire lifetimes. There was virtually no place on the entire globe you could go that would turn down a 20. Andrew Jackson's face beside the famous seal of the U.S. Treasury was probably America's best-known export, from Dar es Salaam to Sri Lanka to the smallest gold mining outpost in the Amazon Basin. Every shopkeeper on Earth recognized a $20 bill. The dollar was universal, and not just universal in commerce, though the majority of international transactions were conducted in dollars, but universally held as a long-term store of value globally. The world's central banks stockpiled U.S. dollars far more than any other currency. Now, most Americans may not have known that, or they did, but it doesn't matter whether they knew it. It was very good for everyone who lives here. Because there were so many U.S. dollars in circulation outside of the country, the cost of borrowing money inside the country remained artificially low. And that's one of the reasons that in this country, America, middle-class people could buy their own homes. The U.S. government, meanwhile, was able to run up astronomical debts without many obvious consequences. Now, from time to time, the Congress would debate something called the debt ceiling, but it was abstract. For most people, the entire topic didn't seem very relevant to their lives because for most of that time, it really wasn't. America printed the U.S. dollar, we controlled the global reserve currency, and that meant that for us, money was cheap. We had privileges that nobody else in the world had. It's been very nice, but what would happen if it ended? You don't even really want to think about that because the consequences would be too ugly, really ugly.
There are consequences. There are. And, you know, we've been enjoying privileges. Americans have been enjoying privileges that other countries just haven't been able to enjoy. And it's gone on for a long time. Yes, it's been propped up by debt and by printing money, but we've been able to expand debt and print more money because the dollar's always been the reserve currency. When that stops, it all collapses like a house of cards. This is from 2015, July 2015, death blow to the dollar. Here again at thetrumpet.com, 7-8 years ago, it says reserve currency status is golden. It gives America special privileges. This is the language we use, the same that Tucker used last night. Special privileges and enormous power. The Trumpet said the infrastructure is being built for a world without the United States. It is a sign that although the U.S. dollar may appear to be strong right now, its long-term fundamentals are swiftly eroding, and with it, American power and prosperity. You see the handwriting on the wall. This is from Gateway. End of dollar. India uses rupees rather than U.S. dollar for international trade. 18 countries agree to trade in INR. It says in the article, following the U.S. Fed Reserve's sharpest tightening in monetary policy in decades, India has offered its currency as an alternative for trade to nations that are experiencing a shortage of dollars, Bloomberg reports. As a result of Joe Biden's disastrous economic policies, there are now coordinated efforts to weaken the global reliance on the U.S. dollar. Think about that prophecy in Isaiah, the Mart of Nations. Trade, economy, I mean, it's all connected. The United States and Britain are about to be shut out. And that's discussed in this book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This article concludes, India's new foreign trade policy took effect on April 1st, according to Reuters. There's another story with respect to Kenya. I guess in the case of that nation, they had a shortage of dollars in circulation. So listen to what this Kenyan president said to his people that were concerned. Clip 11.
For the people who work numbers, I am giving you free advice that those of you who are holding dollars, you shortly might go into losses. You better do what you must do, because this market is going to be different in a couple of weeks. And so I just want to assure those in Kenya who were facing challenges of access to dollars that we have taken steps to ensure that dollar availability in the next couple of weeks is going to be very different, because our fuel companies and will now be paying for fuel in Kenya shillings. They do not have to look for dollars every month.
He said in the first part of that clip, if you're holding dollars, you certainly might experience losses. That's just the little nation of Kenya in Africa. One of many examples, like the Gateway said, 18 countries agree to trade in the INR. They're fleeing. They're running from the dollar during Bidenflation. They see Biden printing trillions and trillions and trillions more. They see the disaster in Afghanistan, now the funding of the Ukraine war effort. And they know it's time to move on. Listen again to Tucker from last night, number 5.
Smart foreigners, and there are some, believe it or not, start to dump the U.S. dollar. Why? Because the U.S. dollar was no longer a reliable store of value. Suddenly, it was a political weapon that could be wielded at will against anyone who held it. So what if you had a border dispute with one of your neighbors that the State Department hadn't authorized? Or what if you accidentally criticized transgender theology and irritated the Human Rights Campaign? Well, the U.S. government might denounce you as immoral and then confiscate all your money. Because they just did that with Russia. And as a result, dollars began to look much less appealing to the rest of the world. And so de-dollarization began, and it has accelerated at remarkable speed, almost without comment in the American media, over the last year. So Russia announced it will conduct business in Asia, Africa, and Latin America in Chinese currency. Brazil, which has a brand new government supported by the Biden administration, announced it will do the same thing. Brazil, largest economy in the hemisphere after ours. Pakistan is doing the same thing. That's a longtime U.S. ally. India and Malaysia, two of the biggest economies in the world, announced they'll be settling their trade in their own currencies, not the dollar. Even France, which we liberated, is using Chinese currency in a new liquefied natural gas trade. China and Saudi Arabia are now major business partners. And again, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is happening around the world, and all of it is shutting out the U.S. dollar. And it's happening a lot faster than anybody could have predicted.
Notice he said they're shutting out the U.S. dollar. It's an attack. It's an attack from America's enemies. This is an article way back in the year 2000 by the late John Tim Thompson. Tim Thompson wrote in April of 2000 in The Trumpet. It says, when investors take their money out of a country, it's called capital flight. Foreign capital flight is probably the greatest financial danger facing America today. This is an article that's 23 years old. This was the forecast at The Trumpet. He refers to Deuteronomy 28, verses 43 through 52, how that they show these verses that foreigners who own America's assets and are financing its national debt and fueling its stock markets are going to buy our bonds to make astronomical loans to us, and then they will besiege and destroy us financially because of that debt condition. Those nations are going to turn on America. Well, now we're seeing it happen. Tucker was talking about it on Wednesday night. It says, it doesn't matter that our money says in God we trust. It is the almighty dollar Americans truly trust, as Proverbs 18:11 and Ecclesiastes 7:12 clearly show. And then later on, Mr. Thompson says, it is foolish to think America will be different from every other civilization in history. That is nothing but pride and vanity. And remember the warning that hubris is running pretty high. That's when mistakes happen. He's quoting from another source there. But then he writes this, America is making a terrible mistake, which will result in the greatest fall in all of mankind's history. As soon as America is no longer a safe place for foreign money, that money will be gone. And once the foreign money is gone, it will leave us with a mountain of debt that we cannot repay. And also with a mountain of worthless paper money. And Tucker talked about the Weimar Republic in Germany in this last clip I'll play for you from that segment on Wednesday night. This is number 6.
But if Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden and the rest of these reckless leaders have their way, an increasing number of countries will do what so many have already done, which is begin to reject the U.S. dollar. And what will happen then? Well, all those dollars will come home. And the value of our currency will plummet even further. And that will lead to poverty across the United States. And that will lead to the typical political and cultural volatility that inevitably follows economic collapse. Disaster. And we've seen it before. Of course, you know the famous pictures from Germany in the early 20s. Banknotes and wheelbarrows. When I buy a cup of coffee, that'll be 30 pounds of currency. Kids playing with worthless stacks of Deutschmarks. That was called Weimar, the Weimar Republic. And that government collapsed because of hyperinflation. And then economic collapse led to communist revolutions across Germany and ultimately to, fill in the blank, the Nazi regime. That's well known. In fact, it's a cliche at this point. But here's the thing that nobody seems to remember. What brought on the economic collapse that set the world on fire? Does anyone remember that? Why did the German government blow up its own currency? Well, simple. The German government took on too much debt in order to pay for a pointless war. Yes, a pointless war did that. And if that sounds familiar, it's because exactly what we have done repeatedly for decades. We did it in Vietnam. We did it in Iraq. We did it in Afghanistan. And every time we got away with it because uniquely we held the world's reserve currency. But this time could be very, very different.
This time will be very, very different. He's right about that. You know, his view on international relations and what the U.S. should be involved in or not overseas may be not perfectly in alignment with Bible prophecy, but he's right about the coming economic collapse. And he's also right to point out some relatively recent history going back to Germany before the Second World War. I mean, these are earth-shaking developments, that mart of nations, prophecy in Isaiah, that we've talked about so often at our website, thetrumpet.com. You see it in other areas besides just abandoning the dollar. This is an article here from the Wall Street Journal. Japan breaks with U.S. allies, buys Russian oil at prices above cap. Remember the initial reaction to the Ukraine war, all the sanctions that the West was going to slap on Russia? It was just going to destroy Russia's economy. And now here you see, here's another case. Japan's breaking with the West and saying, you know what, we're just going to buy Russian oil. And Russia has a lot of it. And, you know, the other thing that Tucker pointed out, I didn't play this clip for you, but he said the thing about the U.S. dollar is that there's no tangible assets behind it. There's no gold behind it. America hasn't known for decades even how much gold is in Fort Knox. And then he says Biden emptying the strategic petroleum reserve. At least the oil is a tangible asset that's always going to hold some value. Quite unlike paper money, when people lose their trust in how valuable it is, once they think it's not valuable, we'll see just how worthless that paper is. It won't even be worth the paper that it's printed on. Japan got the U.S. to agree to the exception, saying it needed to ensure access to Russian energy. The concession shows Japan's reliance on Russia for fossil fuels, which analysts say contributed to a hesitancy in Tokyo to back Ukraine, etc., etc. There were the reports earlier this week about OPEC cutting its oil output, I think by 500 million barrels, something like that. You'll have to look it up, I guess. But it's significant. And it's significant enough to cause fuel prices to continue upward. here again, thanks to Joe Biden's war on domestic energy production, you can expect higher prices at the gas station. Listen to a reporter asking Biden about this cut in oil production from OPEC, clip 9.
Mr. President, on OPEC, do you have any reaction to the oil production cut, sir? OPEC?
On OPEC.
It's not going to be as bad as you think. And, of course, you know what that means. The president also, the fake president, I should say, on another matter, he said that, you know, we've got to start thinking about getting ready for a second pandemic. A second pandemic? I mean, they're already trying to just sort of bury what happened in 2020, their reaction, the lockdowns and everything else. And here he comes out talking about another one. This is clip 10.
From Congress.
Well, we'll get through at least this year. We do need more money, but we don't just need more money for vaccines for children eventually. We need more money to plan for the second pandemic. There's going to be another pandemic. We have to think ahead.
You look at the way these people spend money on these boogeymen, whether it's climate change or now the second pandemic, when we've got these existential crises going on at the moment. Mayorkas says it's not really a crisis. Afghanistan, that was perfect. Leaving behind $90 billion worth of military hardware, no problem. It's just like Ukraine. We just gave it to, it's the Afghani people. They're the ones responsible for it. It was a goodwill gesture on our part. You look back on it, and there's a lot to be proud of, says John Kirby. Listen to this from CNN. I mean, Americans are looking at all this, just like in looking at that five-minute montage from Afghanistan coverage in the summer of 2021. I mean, people can see it with their eyes. They know what's going on. Ordinary Americans see what's happening in the economy. They see what's happening at the gas station, at the grocery store. Listen to this from CNN, clip 1.
But we begin with some brand new CNN polling and what the numbers tell us about a president still working on his reelection plan as he heads today to Camp David for the Easter weekend. The numbers are beyond sobering for President Biden. They tell us many, or in some cases most of you, have deep doubts about his performance and about the direction of the country right now.
And President Biden hasn't even formally announced his reelection yet, but we asked the American people if he deserves reelection, if he deserves a second term. 32%, just a third of Americans in this poll, John, say yes, Joe Biden deserves to be reelected. When we asked that back in December, it was up at 37%. So he's lost a little bit of ground here.
The guy focuses there on the top numbers. Notice the bottom number. 67% say he should not be reelected. I saw where Robert Kennedy, came out and said he's going to try to primary Joe Biden in the Democrat elections next year. Should be an interesting next 12, 15 months. People see the curses. People are unhappy. The nation is in decline, as President Trump said at Mar-a-Lago the other night. We're a nation in decline. And with respect to the dollar, like Tucker said, I mean, they're fleeing fast. It's accelerating. All these curses, just like Leviticus 26 says, just like Mr. Armstrong covered in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. This is from American Military News. It says a Pentagon study revealed that 77%, I mean, the enlistment figures have already plummeted. Just to try to get the number of people we need for the Army, for the military, 77% of young Americans do not qualify for military service without a waiver due to being overweight, drug use, or mental or physical problems. 77%! Look at how unhealthy we are in more ways than one. Mentally, physically, certainly spiritually. 77% can't even get into the military because they're in such poor health, or they're addicted to drugs, or they've got mental or physical problems of some kind. These are catastrophic numbers. This is a nation dying, all these headlines that we're running through. You look at the crime in the streets. Here, Alvin Bragg is going after the bad orange man. This is from the Daily Mail. It says, terrifying rap sheets of the 10 worst New York City criminals who were repeatedly released by Manhattan DA Bragg as he focuses on the Trump indictment. The Daily Mail says, in August, Mayor Eric Adams revealed that the same 10 criminals made up nearly 500 crimes. This is Alvin Bragg letting them out over and again, and they keep committing crimes, no problem. But Trump, he put something on the wrong ledger. He wrote something in incorrectly. And so he needs to go to jail for 136 years. Can you believe this? It says here, 500 crimes, and that 60% of them were still roaming the streets at that time. They're still out roaming the streets, looking for more crimes to commit. This is from CNN. Again, a lot of this is from mainstream sources. The stabbing death of Cash App founder Bob Lee has prompted comments perpetuating the notion that San Francisco is dangerous and crime-riddled. Well, this is actually CNN fact-checking the runaway crime statistics in these major cities. But data shows violent crime, especially homicides, are well below that of many other cities of a similar size. So there's CNN rushing to the defense of San Francisco values. I think there was a celebrity who tweeted out that, you know, this is crazy what's happening in San Francisco. And I'm a Democrat, and I know that it's run by Democrats, but still, something needs to be done. New York, San Francisco. And then you see the Joe Obama people out there itching for a war with the transgender community, telling the transgender people every single day that they're under attack. And it's just the opposite. Just the opposite. Only just this week did we learn about the attack that almost happened in Colorado Springs. It says here from Gateway, just 1 week after a transgender mass shooter killed six people at a Christian school in Nashville, another male-to-female transgender person had a mass shooting plot foiled by police in Colorado Springs. The shooter, 19-year-old William Whitworth, I think he wanted to go by the name Lily, Lily Whitworth laid out extensive plans to plant bombs at and shoot students at Timberview Middle School in Colorado Springs. And this only stopped because the police caught him before it happened. And you saw the insurrection led by the trans people in Nashville. Yesterday, I guess the big news was that two radical Democrats in that state legislature were expelled because the Republicans have a supermajority. And, of course, they're very angry about this at Morning Joe. It's all they wanted to talk about this morning. They got expelled because they led the insurrection. That's what it is, right? When you overtake a legislature, a session, we've been taught, haven't we? We've been taught the past 2 years that when you storm a Capitol and you disrupt an official proceeding, that's an insurrection, and you need to go to jail. Well, not if it's trans people. Joe Scarborough's upset. You can't expel these two Democrats, especially because they're black. That's racism. Racism! These people are so predictable. So predictable. Riley Gaines, you may have seen clips from this. She got second place behind that Leah Thomas, transgender, the man swimming against all these women. And she was ambushed and assaulted yesterday by trans people. They're attacking people. And then you listen to KJP out there saying that the problem is that the trans people are being attacked. Listen to clip 12.
This has been one of the worst weeks of 2023 so far in terms of anti-LGBTQ bills becoming law in states across America. The North Dakota Senate passed 10 anti-LGBTQ bills in just one day, a single day record. With the enactment of a new law in Indiana, 14 states have now banned gender-affirming health care. This is a dangerous attack on the rights of parents to make the best health care decisions for their own kids. Look, this is awful news. Let's be very clear about that. LGBTQI+ kids are resilient. They are fierce. They fight back. They're not going anywhere. and we have their back. We are so proud of the kids across this country who have organized protests and school walkouts to tell the politicians in their states to stop this legislative bullying.
Sodom and Gomorrah, besieged by curses. Make sure you request U.S. and Britain in Prophecy if you haven't already. The 800 number 1-866-930-3024. All right, we'll transition straight. I don't want to leave out our current news segment again on this Friday. So we'll transition straight into the current news and we'll come back and see if there's time for an email or two.
2 months ago, the United States military allowed a Chinese spy balloon to float across the mainland U.S. for an entire week. Although the Biden administration claimed that the balloon was not a major breach, NBC reported on April 3rd that the balloon was transmitting intelligence back to China in real time. The balloon flew above sensitive U.S. military sites for a week before the Air Force shot it down near the East Coast. The Biden administration chose to let the balloon fly over these sites, despite knowing it was an espionage device. America Under Attack provides essential context for understanding why America's leaders would knowingly allow a foreign power to collect our military secrets. There are dark forces in control of America's government, and they are deliberately leading our nation to its destruction. In Finland's parliamentary elections this week, the far-right Finns Party won 20.1% of the vote. The center-right National Coalition Party came in first with 20.8% of the vote. The National Coalition will now have to decide whether to go into coalition with the center-left or with the Finns. The success of this radical far-right party shows the increasing appeal of the fringe-right movement in Europe. The rise of the fringe right has been a major trend across all of Europe for the last 15 years, showing a widespread rejection of mainstream parties and mainstream political traditions. Japan is purchasing Russian oil at approximately $70 a barrel, above the $60 a barrel price cap put in place by the United States and its Western allies. According to the Wall Street Journal, the U.S. gave Japan permission to sidestep the price cap back in September 2022 to ensure that Japan could meet its energy needs. At the same time, Japan has given Ukraine more than $6 billion in financial support since Russia's war on the nation began last year. Japan supports Ukraine and Western sanctions against Russia, as long as they do not complicate Japan's access to energy. Japan is a Western ally on paper and often boasts of its loyalty to the U.S. However, its willingness to buy Russian oil that helps finance Russia's war shows that Japan is not as firmly in the U.S. camp as appearances suggest. Bible prophecy forecasts that in the end time, Japan will not be allied with the United States, but with a power bloc of Eastern nations called the Kings of the East. To learn how and why, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches Japan's March Toward Militarism. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
So there you go, the Friday segment of current news. A couple of emails that we can finish with quickly. It says, you can take the most horrible stuff, the death of this nation, talk about it, and somehow uplift God's people. Well, that's good to hear. I'd say the Holy Spirit is in there somewhere. Another one writes from Chicago. I watched every minute of Wednesday's show, 54 minutes. It was one of the best shows that you've put on. Congratulations. And then another one here coming in from the UK. It says, wonderful, inspiring topic as usual, always smiling and nodding my head, listening to the discussion on such crucial news for today. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, we'd love to hear from you. TD@thetrumpet.com. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us for today's show. Thank you for joining us all week in some cases, and we'll see you next time.